Playback on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Dublin Airport's Platinum VIP Terminal. Experience private check-in, suites for relaxation, and then chauffeur-driven to your aircraft.
Good morning, and welcome to Playback. We're going to start yesterday. The visiting critic on the Oliver Callan programme was Hugh Wallace. But he wasn't talking about wallpaper or homes or little nooks and crannies.
You're okay now, are you?
Because oh, my goodness, you tried to kill me off yesterday. That was the most horrible experience.
He went on a roller coaster.
When you see them, because afterwards I went and looked, and you see them coming around the corner, and it's the one where you've got nothing to put your feet on.
That's right, you're dangling.
Which is worse.
Yeah, you're dangling.
And Martin and I were in the front. So it was even worse again.
When's the last time you did a roller coaster?
Oh, 40 years ago.
Okay. I'm not doing it.
No.
Because they're world-class roller coasters. We finally have them in Ireland.
Yes. Amazing. It's in the new section out in Emerald Park, and the roller coaster rides are amazing.
Yeah.
60 seconds of sheer hell. You must be joking. It felt like it would never stop.
Now, what happened to you? Because we sent you to do the Cuchulainn roller coaster, which is the wooden.
Yes.
And I think it's the longest wooden roller coaster.
It's amazing to watch as well.
It's amazing. The sound inside that one now, because it rattles and it bends.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's quite beautiful.
Oh, it's amazing to watch. But Sarah decided she wanted to, you know, see if my heart was still working. So she said, out you go now on that. And off I went. And you're in the front and you're going, that's that, go on. And then whoosh, you go around in the spirals. So it was like this, you know, the way you got one heart attack over and the next one, you're into the next one. Then you thought, well, that's the next one and next one. It was just extraordinary.
Half the fun is the anticipation.
Oh, yeah.
And that was architect and TV presenter Hugh Wallace chewing the roller coaster fat with Oliver yesterday. Rewind to this time 7 days ago. The presidential election was all over bar the counting, and the result was pretty much called by Labour former senator and well-known poll watcher Kevin Humphreys.
Like, my good instinct is she's really comfortable, and we'd be calling Catherine Connolly president by 12 o'clock.
But there was plenty of drama over the next 48 hours.
Fucking last spare of the hell of Catherine. What do you say to your supporters? 84% they said in the presentation school there. You're thanking them.
I went to the presentation school, so I'm absolutely delighted with the result. And I want to thank all of my supporters. Actually, I want to thank everybody, even those that didn't vote for me. I understand their concerns in relation to who will represent them best. And I will do my utmost to represent everyone.
You must be feeling very proud today.
The pride is coming. The pride is coming.
And the jubilation continued in the city of the tribes.
I've been tallying Clare Galway, Ballinclare National School, box number 181. And in that box, we have a total of 181 for President Catherine Connolly. We have a total of 19 for Gavin and a total of 58 for Heather Humphreys.
Jackie, you're almost emotional. You're tearing up there when you said President Catherine Connolly. Are you celebrating already?
Absolutely we are, yes. I mean, this was a long time coming. I think the people have spoken.
The people have indeed spoken. But a large part of their speech was spoiled votes. Here's Barry Lennon reporting into Brendan O'Connor's programme.
But in some areas, we are seeing a quarter of the votes that have been tallied so far are spoiled. Dublin North West, in Ballymun Finglas, so there was a campaign there to spoil votes. So just to put that into perspective, Brendan, there are as many spoiled votes in some constituencies that would elect a TD in a general election.
And back, not to Galway, but to a famous Galwegian. Singer Mary Coughlan grew up on the same street as Catherine Connolly.
It's such an overwhelming feeling to be, you know, from Shantala, a friend of the family, went out with her brother. And just from Shantala particularly, that we're going to have a president of Ireland, you know.
So it's a big, big day in the parish in Shantala.
Oh, jeez, they'll be out tonight.
So how long have you known her? Since you were like small?
Oh, she's national school, yeah. Since we were four or five. And I'm a year ahead of her. Catherine comes from 14. My next door neighbours were 10, there was 13, there was 11, there was only 5 of us. We were a small family. But we did all our playing, all our out on the street every day during the summer, come in for your dinner, out again until 9 o'clock at night, you know. It was like a wonderful place to grow up, but it was also very much like, there's nothing from Shantala about teddy boys. And it's a very, very working class, you know, environment. And we all went to the one school and you know, we all traipsed up the road together every day. And it was like you'd go on to secondary school or you'd go to the tech, you know. But certainly I've never thought in my life that there'd be somebody from, like a neighbour would be the president of Ireland, you know.
Okay.
It just means that anybody can be anything.
Singer Mary Coughlan there on Brendan's programme on Saturday. A little bit later, one of the architects of the Spoil the Vote campaign, Declan Ganley, spoke with Colm O'Mungon.
What this points to is an enormous dissatisfaction and rejection of this particular process and this ballot. The way that it was rigged, the way that it was curated. We had no contest of ideas that you would normally see in a healthy democracy. And that was intentional because once you had candidates being actively blocked, which is absolutely what happened, you end up with a race that is fake because it doesn't bring in all of the opinions of the country, all of the ideas, all of the voices. And look, what we see now is that there is a very significant portion of people who bothered to go to a polling station and cast a spoil ballot, plus all of those that just tuned out, that did not even participate. And both Micheál Martin and Simon Harris today have a lot of reflection and thinking to do. This wasn't a Declan Ganley thing. This was, as you know, a much wider, and you did say that at the intro, this was a much wider movement than just me. I was just one voice of many in it. But there is a massive gap on the centre-right in Ireland that where it is not occupied by anybody at all. It's fascinating when you see that there was only one member out of the whole Oireachtas came out before the vote and called for a spoil vote. Just one out of every single member of the Oireachtas. There's an enormous gap on the centre-right that is just not represented by anybody, and that space has to be filled.
Declan Ganley there on Saturday with Colm O'Mungon. The poet said, if winter comes, can spring be far behind? And for Barry Lennon, that spring means the Galway West by-election.
By my tot, there could be as many as 7 left-leaning candidates running in the Galway West by-election, with names such as Helen Ogbu for Labour, Pauline O'Reilly for the Green Party, Alan Curran for the Social Democrats, a former Social Democrats councillor, Eileen Shoaga, who was very close to Catherine Connolly on Shop Street last week, and also Mike Cubbert, a long-standing independent, the Mayor of Galway, all mentioned with going for a run. Sinn Féin also likely to field a candidate, Matt Carthy has said here, at the RDS today. Independent Ireland narrowly missed out on a seat in the general election last year through Connemara councillor Noel Thomas. He'll be fancying his chances. And then Fine Gael, Sean Kine, the senator who beat Catherine Connolly by just 17 votes to a seat in the 2011 general election. He'll look to reclaim the seat he lost in 2020, although he may face challenge from the former Galway footballer Eddie Hoare, whilst in Fianna Fáil, Ollie Crowe, Alan Sheevers and 24-year-old Killian Keane, the names mentioned by party apparatchiks today, as thoughts immediately turned to this by-election and in particular what the opposition might well do.
You get the distinct impression that the Lenihan pencils are already being sharpened in sublime anticipation of the Galway West by-election. But Barry was undoubtedly the busiest person in radio last weekend.
I was about to go to Sinead and I've just had an instruction to go to Barry Lenihan, and I think there's some movement, Barry, at Dublin Castle. What can you tell us?
Yes, Catherine Connolly has just arrived there in the past few moments, flanked by her family, friends and supporters. As she's now arrived, she's now going up those steps to St Patrick's Hall, where she'll be officially announced as the 10th Uachtaráin na hÉireann elect.
And moments later, with Barry Lennon still on hand.
Barry Ryan now explaining the process to her, inviting her to stand in the middle of the stage. Fine Gael's Heather Humphreys now coming as well, shaking hands with Barry Ryan. Here's Barry Ryan now with the result.
The votes obtained by each candidate are as follows. Catherine Connolly, 914,143. Jim Gavin, 103,568. Heather Humphreys, 424,987. Tushkuil an quota bwinche an makake, Derevi Manish, Guil Catherine Connolly, Tuffa in a Uachtaráin Éireann.
The new president and her vanquished opponent intend meeting up for a little celebratory libation.
Tombicht nu le gin agus elderflower lat galua. Dentimwich nu de vimur imon gisbodokta erartii gomai gin agus elderflower agin lekela, koskiopa agus is fager. Ta ek gent agin lekela.
Kaharja agus Catherine agus Guramila Mahagu.
The funeral was the result official, then the recriminations and the post-mortem started. On Monday, MEP Sean Kelly and putative Fine Gael candidate was on the news at one.
I think they've had a great chance of winning, and you would have to ask yourself, why was there such a determined effort to stop me from getting nomination? It was an honour to be considered as one of two great candidates, but one was anointed and the other was shafted.
A succession of ministers and backbenchers from both parties appeared on the airwaves throughout the week. And on Thursday, Claire Byrne spoke to the Taoiseach about the running of the campaign.
We have discussions in the party. I don't sort of tell people, because that's not that kind of politics, isn't like that in the modern era. It's never been my style. I engage with people. I've canvassed every single, you know, every constituency with the TDs of the parliamentary party and with senators. I've knocked on doors up and down the country. I go down and meet people in their constituencies. I'm not a top-down person.
Louis the 14th is what James O'Connor compared you to.
I've made the point. That was a... I don't think James should have made that comment. I don't think it reflects Micheál Martin. It doesn't reflect me as a person. Those kind of hurtful comments are unacceptable in my view. I'm not that kind of person. And I've always engaged. I'm a phone call away from any TD or senator. Always have been. A TD rang me on Sunday night and said, fair play to you. You're always just one phone call away. Because he had some issue to raise with me.
Do you think
that's always been my approach. And like when the party was on its knees, you know, I did stuff maybe that others might know. I kind of went through in local elections, went down into every parish in the country, identified candidates.
This is 2011 you're talking
about. Yeah, 2011 onwards, 2014, identified candidates. We appointed area representatives and I knocked on doors with them. Mm-hmm. So the idea that I'm some top-down person is just repugnant to me as a person. It's not my style.
And yesterday on Claire Byrne, Richard Boyd Barrett, TD, with an update on his cancer treatment.
Well, I'm a lot better. And you remember you were kind enough to give me the opportunity to explain back in April that I had had a cancer diagnosis for throat cancer and that I would be stepping back from politics for a few months to get the treatment. And I got the scan that you get after the treatment. You know, the treatment has taken months and I got a scan in the last week or so, which has said that the treatment has been successful and has eliminated the cancer.
Which is great news. Yeah. I'm surprised it's come so soon. You know, it's relatively quick, or is it? What are they saying to you?
Well, I will have to be monitored closely. I've got to have checkups every 3 months with this cancer for the next 5 years. But they are saying it's worked. Like it's as good a result for the treatment I got as you could get. Now, there are a lot of side effects and the treatment is heavy. I mean, I think I mentioned when I was on your show before that the doctors had said this is going to be a harsh treatment and they weren't lying.
Yeah.
You know, it was a harsh treatment.
And there was no gilding the lily there. I mean, it was tough.
It was tough. And there are a lot of side effects and I'm not 100%. You know, I'm not 100%, but I'm recuperating. I'm a lot better than I was. But the substantial issue of the actual cancer, the treatment has been successful in removing
news.
It. And so I got my life back and... you know, the significant, they burn the cancer out of your throat. And that means there's quite a lot of damage done to your throat.
But you sound really good.
I can hear it being a bit deeper and it does change a little bit over the course of the day. And you can get tired, you know, my voice can get tired. So like one of the biggest side effects you're kind of dealing with as the treatment kind of impacts on your body and in the aftermath of the treatment is trying to eat. I mean, I didn't eat any food, solid food for about... 4 months, 3 to 4 months. I was living on nutri drinks and shakes, which is...
That can't have been much fun.
It was really not fun. Yeah. And you wonder at that time, will you ever be eating normal food again? Your appetite is gone. You can't hold anything down at periods, you know, like the nausea, all that stuff. Mm. you're losing weight and you're having to fight to try and maintain weight. Mm-hmm. But of course you are conscious of, you know, your constituents and, you know, that like they elected you to be there to represent mm-hmm. them. And that's why I am keen. I'm very glad to get the opportunity to say here that I'm on my way back.
But maybe we should have a substitute TD system here, because you can do it at other levels in the political system, at EU level and at a council level, you know, in situations like that where you've got illness. Would it be useful if you had somebody who could fully step into your role?
It would absolutely be useful. I think it's a very good idea. And to be honest, until this happened, it wouldn't have occurred to me. But, you know, when I think about the fact that I've been basically out of things for 6 or 7 months, yeah, I think it would be an extremely good idea.
From yesterday's Today with Clare Byrne, the unmistakable voice of Richard Boyd Barrett, TD. One of Marty Morrissey's guests on Bank Holiday Monday was Kathleen Kennedy Townsend. Yes, one of those Kennedys. And if you think that what's going on in the US now is something totally new, Kathleen Kennedy Townsend spoke to Marty about her grandfather, known as Honey Fitz.
Senator Lodge did not like all these immigrants from Eastern Europe who were coming. Mm. So he had a law, legislation that was passed that said nobody could come into the United States unless they could read or write. And as you may know, that in the 1840s, when the Irish were coming, many of them could not read or write because the British would not allow the Irish to read or write. Honey Fitz's most important moment when he was in Congress was to give a very eloquent speech about how unfair it was to prohibit people from coming to the United States because they could not read or write. Because if that had been the rule, all these Irish immigrants would not be allowed to come in. Congress paid no attention to him and still passed the law. And so he then went to President Cleveland and he made his argument. And in fact, President Cleveland listened to Honey Fitz and vetoed the law.
Where's President Cleveland these days when you need him? The interview also included one of the deftest question dodges that I've ever heard.
What do you think your dad would think of America now?
My mother was always very careful to say, never answer that question.
Really?
Yes, because she said, you'll always answer the way you think it should be right now. Do you think, do you get my point?
100%.
It's just not a fair question.
Okay.
Because my father might think X and I think Y, and so yeah. I'll just pretend that what he thinks is what I think.
Kathleen Kennedy Townsend with Marty on Monday. Last weekend was, of course, the Dublin City Marathon weekend. And there was a lot of runners and running on the radio.
The 400 was ridiculously hard.
David Gillick has written a book called The Race.
It's one of those events that just, you know, it cripples you, you know, mentally.
One race, like?
Oh, yeah. Like, I could tell you so many stories of races.
What, 45 seconds?
Yeah, like? Well, hopefully under 45 seconds, 44 seconds. But so there's been times when I've had to lay, you know, on the track post-race for maybe 40 minutes. Unable to get up, just times where I'd be vomiting because it takes everything. It's in between an endurance and a sprint event, so you're basically trying to run as fast as you can for as long as you can, and the last 50 of a 400 metre race is just when the body is screaming at you. You know, people talk about lactic acid, you know, it's your muscles are screaming, they're painful, and then you finish. And it was often the aftermath, because then suddenly you get that rush of pain, your head will be thumping, you know, and it's just, that's the commitment that you make. And the training is even more horrific. You know, I used to dread Tuesdays because that was our toughest track session of the week, where literally, you know, you're on Monday and you're biting your nails because you know tomorrow is Tuesday.
The obsessive side of athletics even permeated the kitchen. He told Brendan about the day that he sat down to an omelette.
I came in on a Saturday after one of our last session of the week. Sunday was a rest day, and I came in on a Saturday about 12 o'clock and Charlotte said, would you like lunch? And I said, oh yeah, that'd be great. And she said, what would you like? And I said, oh, the usual, a Spanish omelette, because every Saturday lunchtime I had a Spanish omelette. So I went off, had a shower, came back down, she made a Spanish omelette, which people know include or frittata, whatever word you want to use, potato. And at this time we had sweet potato. So I'm eating it and I turn to Charlotte and I say, yeah, how much sweet potato do you put in this? And she said, the usual. And I said, how much is the usual? And she said, 250 grams of sweet potato. I lost the plot because the usual was 200 grams of sweet potato. And then she didn't talk to me for the rest of the weekend.
And you knew eating it as well, that
I was eating
wrong.
It, yeah.
Falling out for the weekend over 50 grams of sweet potato. David, I think I'm on her side. But the one-time sprinter was gearing up for a much longer challenge.
I'm actually throwing on the runners tomorrow morning to do the Dublin Marathon. So,
excellent.
But I need that.
And look, every park runner out there would tell you, like, you probably forgot it. It's, running's great for the head.
Running is great.
It had become toxic
that's,
for you.
That's but my, my therapy, you know.
Yeah. Charlotte's put up with a lot. I can
she's
see.
She's put up with it awful lot. Yeah, she's okay. A saint.
That was David Gillick there, looking forward to the Dublin City Marathon the following day. And on that marathon, Anne-Marie McGlynn was the second Irish woman across the line.
Yeah, you know what, to be honest, the best girl won on the day. She was full of running. Just glad I was here, to be honest. I've had a tough 6 weeks. Tore my hamstring 6 weeks ago. I missed a lot of work. It showed today. Definitely showed in them conditions. You know, you needed to be tough out there, and I lacked that toughness. I lacked that miles, but Trev's nanny passed on Friday, and
so
I just wanted to bring it home for her, to be honest. Yeah, it's a tough one. Not because I didn't win for three in a row, to be honest, just because I didn't do what I wanted to do. You don't want to have a hard emotional day because the marathon is a beast all as it is. I just didn't feel myself out there today. Ava was very good. She's definitely one to watch, and I want to see these young girls come up, you know, and they're not a threat. Like, I really do. I'm 46 coming in February. She's 19. That's what we need. She needs to be nurtured now, and we need to see her coming back year on year, because we've had this before and they disappear. We need to nurture her now and build her and bring her back year on year, because she'll be the future, yeah.
And she was quite literally the future, because she popped up on Morning Ireland on Monday morning with Audrey.
I'm in shock still. My legs, they're a lot better today. Maybe walking around a bit was helpful. And I was up a bit last night, though, with my toe because it was bleeding.
Yeah.
But other than that, I feel great.
You haven't attempted a flight of stairs yet, have you?
No.
No.
I'm staying away from those.
leave those for a little while.
Now, remember danger here. Remember a nation holds its breath. Well, when the Irish women beat the Belgians, a new term has gone into the sporting lexicon.
Abby Larkin, on as a substitute, has scored for Ireland with a delicious dink over the goalkeeper. It's 2-1 to Belgium. Ireland lead 5-4 in aggregate.
What a goal.
John Kenny on commentary. Our soccer correspondent Tony O'Donoghue was there. Fierce close, Tony, fierce late, but a win, a promotion and a playoff away from a World Cup. How is your heart after that finish?
A delicious dink was a lovely way of describing it. And a goal in the 90th minute, of course, is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, what seldom is wonderful. John Kenny should go and copyright a delicious dink for future use by sports commentators all over the world. Still in sportsland, the most bizarre sporting story of the week from Porrick Lodge on Morning Ireland.
Finally, with 100 days to go to the start of the Winter Olympics in Italy, American rapper Flavor Flav, a founding member of hip-hop group Public Enemy, has been appointed to the newly created role of official hype man for the USA bobsleigh and skeleton teams. His aim will be to keep the team's spirits high and to create excitement amongst the fans.
From Porrick Lodge on Morning Ireland. Ireland's fit-up family, that's fit-up, not fittest, was a dock on one that went out on Bank Holiday Monday. People of a certain age will remember when groups of strolling players would pull into town and put on a show. Many's the story of the fit-ups I heard from my own parents as a young fella. In Ronan Kelly's documentary, we heard the story of producing a play about the apparition at Fatima. And in every venue, a vital ingredient had to be found.
We went to Glenty's and Mammy and Auntie Sally went up to the local convent to get a girl, a young girl from the school to play the Virgin Mary. And the nun, she said, we're looking for a girl for the Virgin tonight in the show. Oh, you'll find it very hard now to find a virgin in Glenty's, she says.
She didn't actually mean that. Like,
that's what she was slagging. Yeah, she was messing them. She was going very hard to get her. Yeah, you'll find it very hard to find a virgin in Glenty's, she says.
Poor woman. Yeah, but that was a great attraction for people to come to see the Virgin Mary, you know, as one of their own. They'd always be, we'd dress them up and, you know, in the clothes and that, and there was a spotlight put on them, you know, and the minute they'd come on then, which was a very serious part of the play when the Virgin came on, but all you'd hear was, hey, go on, Mary!
I've howled every time I've heard that clip, and I'm howling now. It's absolutely brilliant. Ronan Kelly's documentary there, Ireland's fit up family. And of course, if there was reverence for the Virgin Mary in Glinties, there was also the perennial character of the baddie.
There was some play they'd done years ago where he wouldn't die. I remember Mammy was saying, die, for God's sake, die. He was supposed to die. He gets shot. Someone does a bang from the side letting on a gun. And I remember he said, Mammy, he lay down like, and he's supposed to be dead straight away. But no, he, and another thing, and he kept getting up. And Mammy said he wouldn't stop, and they couldn't get their lines in for him to stop. And you know, oh, when I die.
He's ad-libbing everything, you know, and more and more all the time.
So Mammy said she went down to him, you know, die for God's sake, bloody die. The crowd, I remember telling me that. And he just got, ugh. That
was the end. He was a very dramatic actor. He knew everybody was listening to him.
Ireland's fit up family there, Ronan Kelly's Doc on One. On Tuesday, Philomena Brady popped up on Today with Clare Byrne. Maura Fay's report took us to Loch Ennill, where Philomena has been watching Starling Murmurations. And watching, and watching, and watching.
Well, it came in the other night and it was spilling rain like this, and they still kept coming in, you know, but they might just go down. And they can just get into a group and start going up and down, you know, and it depends on the... If there's bird of prey up there, they'll start going crazy, like, and doing crazy things. And with the weather this evening, they could just maybe just come in and go down, you know. You don't know what they're going to do. We really don't know. It's a kind of a, it's like a big, there, look, you can see them there, look. Yeah. See them going over the White House. Just yeah. Back here to, see them?
Yeah. They're flying around in a little group. God, it's stunning. It's just, I don't know what way to describe it. It's
that's only a small bunch, like, you know, I mean, it's amazing.
They're moving in a cloud and just turning and twisting. It's so spectacular.
And if there's a peregrine or a bird of prey up there, they really will go crazy, like, you know. See them?
Yeah.
And they gradually get bigger. They'll go in and out. Now, they've gone down, but they might come up again. But that's only a small bunch. There they are again, look.
Yeah.
Sorry, I get a bit excited when I see them.
Oh, wonderful stuff there from Philomena Brady and Maura Fay on Today with Clare Byrne. And you can hear the enthusiasm in Philomena's voice. And you can hear the enthusiasm in Jim Wilson's voice on Derek Mooney's programme, where Jim went sea kayaking in West Cork.
As we gently glide through the water, we notice something. It's a familiar sight to me, the beauty of which I haven't seen for many years.
If you look down and move your hand through the water, you might start to see the bioluminescence. So it looks like little sparks coming off your fingers. So that's plankton. Little planktons in the water called dinoflagellates. And when they light up, so they light up in response to any kind of agitation. So if there's a raindrop or a fish or a paddle going through the water, it causes a chemical reaction in the plankton, and then that chemical reaction causes the light. Do you guys have fireflies where you live in the Chicago area? So the fireflies light up the same way, same chemical reaction. But the fireflies then would do it to attract a mate, whereas they think that this plankton is doing it for defense. They're not 100% sure, but they think it's either trying to distract the fish that's trying to eat it, or else attract a bigger fish to come and eat that fish. So watch your fingers.
And that voice there is Nisha Kennedy guiding Jim Wilson through the bioluminescence of the Atlantic Ocean off West Cork. Beautiful stuff. Another great voice on RT Radio 1 this past week is John Moriarty. He was the subject of a distillation of a 7-part podcast series called The Bog Shaman. In this clip, he's talking about the concept of sin.
In the Christian tradition, it is common, I think, to say that you can only sin against another human being or sin against God. You cannot sin against an animal. You cannot sin against a river. You cannot sin against a blade of grass. You can sin against anything. I mean, Christians, we have to open up and say that you can be in a state of sin towards a blade of grass. You can be in a state of sin towards the AIDS virus. To see a tree, to look at a tree and see only cubic feet of timber, that is to sin against the tree. When you see anything as smaller or less than what it is, you are sinning against it. When you see something only with an economic eye, you are sinning against it.
My goodness, John Moriarty there from The Bog Shaman, Moncon on Moriarty. and the late Monk on McGann's brother Ruan was a guest on Arena on Tuesday.
I think it all started on the radio for him with Arena. So Arena, he held a very special place for him.
You did an awful lot of work together, which siblings that work in industries close to each other don't always necessarily do, but you did.
Yeah, I feel odd now because I'm sitting in the very chair that he sat in about 5 weeks ago talking to Brendan. And in that, he talked an awful lot about what we did together. And it has been extraordinary. We didn't plan it. It just emerged that way. And we ended up going all over the world and making documentaries together. And Oscuelga, Vishishin on the Hochtach. And we're hugely proud of it. I think it's of all the work that certainly I did, it's some of the work I'm most proud of is what I did with him. And we just made it up as we went along. Anyway, great, great, great days.
Great days indeed. Ruan McGann there on Arena with Rick O'Shea. And you're welcome back. A lot more welcome than Storm Melissa was when it hit Jamaica on Tuesday. Here's Matthew Cappucci speaking with Drive Time.
I've never seen the National Hurricane Center be so frank in their phrasing. And realistically, this is a life or death situation. The eye wall is coming ashore right now, that innermost buzzsaw of extreme winds. And essentially, it's like a 40, 50 kilometer wide tornado. It will last 3 hours in spots. Some people will see winds gusting upwards of 250 kilometers per hour. And I frankly can't think of a historical precedent happening in such a populated area. Jamaica's home to 2.3 million people.
Now, Matthew is an atmospheric scientist and a storm chaser to boot. He gave a glorious description of flying into the eye of Melissa.
So truth be told, I couldn't visually see much out the windows during most of the storm when we were kind of being jostled around. It was nighttime. It was like being on a roller coaster with a blindfold. I didn't know if I was going up, down, left, right. Definitely reached for the motion sickness bags a couple times. But then suddenly things went calm and I opened the window and I looked and we were in the eye, that perfectly circular column of nothingness where dry, warm air is punching down, carving out a cloud-free area. Up above me, the stars were twinkling. It was beautiful. And yet all around me, I could see the hulking 15-kilometer-tall thunderstorms that were whipping around in the eye wall. It was like being in the middle of an atmospheric sink drain, simultaneously peaceful and mesmerizing, but also sinister and heart-sinking.
Matthew Cappucci, storm chaser. Drive Time also spoke to Jim and Christina, some newlyweds who were holed up in a resort in Jamaica.
Do you have experience of hurricanes before, Jim?
Some, but nothing to this degree. Minor winds, maybe 75, 80. We get blizzards more than hurricanes up where we're from in New England. So, we'll get a blizzard here and there, 75 mile an hour winds, but, nothing like this.
We're doing pretty good considering, what's happening and what's going on. It's definitely a different world outside right now. Mm-hmm. The winds are definitely picking up. The rain's picking up. The windows that haven't been boarded up yet, those are the ones we're kind of looking out and seeing what the world looks like out there. But we're doing pretty good considering otherwise what other people are currently dealing with in Jamaica.
Now, somebody told me that you had intended to come to Ireland on honeymoon.
When it came down to the honeymoon specifically, we thought there's just so much in Ireland we want to do activity-wise. It was going to be a nonstop event. And for the event of a quote-unquote honeymoon, we wanted to go a little bit more lax. And so that's where Jamaica just kind of came in at the last minute. We're like, we'll do fun in the sun honeymoon, and then maybe sometime in the future we'll save enough money and we'll do our Ireland adventure together.
But if they do come to Ireland, they better not get on the 20-6 train from Sligo to Dublin and expect a cup of tea with Oliver on Thursday, Senator Nessa Cosgrove.
So we made our own cart. We made our own just out of a box. It was like make and do out of a box.
Yes.
Stuck on stickers. And we put, like you'd see in old cinema, the cinemas with popcorn. We just had like strings over, over our shoulder.
So the trolley is gone and you decided that you're taking matters into your own. What did you have in your usherette tray?
Different choices of crisps. We had some Tato's. We had bottles of water and just a few different types of bars.
Yeah,
Maltesers. And we were actually, people were slagging us off saying we should have had more fruit and we probably should have had more fruit.
Like there's always have to be someone complaining. This was, were you charging people for the crisps you're handing out?
No, we were just giving them out.
And still they were saying, where's the fruit?
Yeah. How come you don't have a healthier basket? Yeah.
I have to ask you before we go any further, there was smoky bacon in your tray. Did any takers for the smoky bacon?
Yeah, there was a few. We had to kind of give them away. All right, the smoky bacon. They weren't the first choice, but
fair play.
But mostly the cheese and onion is always the old reliable.
And the drought for a cup of tea isn't just a one-way experience either.
And it's the same coming back. Like often people are running to get the train. Well, I know I often am, and I don't have time to stop in Connolly. And I think as well, like a lot of the places here, they're not open that hour in the morning. You know,
right, there's, yeah.
It's different maybe when you're thinking it coming from a bigger city, but when you're coming from getting on in rural stations, there's nothing open and there wouldn't even be a vending machine, you know. So we love having a cup of tea, love having, you know, a 100%. Biscuit or a sandwich, you know.
Senator Nessa Cosgrove with Oliver Callan. Well, as you know, last night was Halloween. And in the run-up to the festivities, there was many a cautionary tale on radio programmes. One, however, was new to me on Thursday's Drive Time.
One example that the county police knew that down in Kerry, they have these door hangers initiatives, and they kind of show green or red that they put on the door, so to alert trick-or-treaters if they wish for them to call in or not. So there's initiatives like that that were happening, and we're doing that with the community. Right. Obviously, they are dealing with the local communities, and they're in with the likes of Age Friendly Ireland, and they're also dealing with some of the autism schools that are down there. So that was the idea that they came around, that they realised that there's maybe Halloween, that although that they're is celebrating in their own way, is that to just be mindful of other people and their needs as well.
From Thursday's Drive Time, Alan Keane from the Garda Engagement Bureau. And still on matters Halloweeny, Rising Time with Shea Byrne yesterday turned to thoughts of Halloween costumes.
Hey, what are you dressing up as?
Well, do you know, my daughter said she was thinking of dressing up as Wednesday Addams.
Oh yeah.
So right. I said that could be a good family one then. And you know, I said to her, we could do a family one. You know, you could dress up as Morticia, and her without any irony or sarcasm whatsoever. Said, oh yeah, and you could be Uncle Fester. Yeah. I was thinking Gomez. You know, I thought that was kind of for the family look, but I suppose she has a point.
You don't need much dressing up.
It's just dark in the eyes. Throw something dark on.
Do you know what? Instead of going for the full, Buffon.
It is a handy one, in fairness.
It's cruel, though, isn't it? It's cruel.
I mean, it's stung. It's stung. I'm not going to lie.
It does. Okay.
That's kids for you. They will let you down every time. And later on the programme, another visit to the Halloween wardrobe with Des Cahill.
I'm a unicorn.
Yeah. The lesser spot.
That's what I'm going as.
Did you have to dress up tonight? Because the grandchildren, they expect you to be dressed up.
Yeah.
So what? How do you
I'm
dress
just
up?
I'm going to be the bigger unicorn.
How do you dress up as a unicorn? Just incidentally.
Watch
now.
Me. I'll send you a photo.
Who's doing the back of the unicorn? Granddad
the back
and
in the front.
Dad and granddad have lost their minds.
Yeah. Shea Byrne is available without prescription every morning at 5:30 on Rising Time. And he, Adam Maguire, Orla Woods, Des Cahill and the entire crew will surely put a smile in your face. And great music too. Just yesterday, he had Gilbert O'Sullivan, he had Sinead O'Connor, he had Luke Combs and many, many more. Another of Oliver's guests this week was Blanadh Ní Chaoimhe. For Blanadh, the Gaeilge has a special place in her heart.
It's funny, you know, Irish comes back in when you're in bits and when you're really happy. I've never, you know, even Ciarán would say when you take off an Irish, I know it's bad or it's brilliant because I don't have to translate
the
so
strongest
quick.
Emotions.
Yeah, because I'm not translating as quickly, you know.
Much of the conversation with Oliver was about Blanadh's sister. Breage died of cervical cancer this past January. Oliver took her back to 2 days before Christmas.
She was in hospital and I was running around looking for L'Occitane this, White Candle this, Tabasco this for the prawn cocktail. I was running around like a crazy person and the bags were full of the stuff she wanted to give to everyone. And then she realised, and we all roared laughing when we went home because she was on oxygen. She can't light a candle near an oxygen tank. But everything had to be perfect.
You knew this was going to be her last Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
That was never discussed and she never acknowledged.
But we knew it. And she was so weak. Oliver, everything took such an effort. The chair, to the door, to the sitting down. Everything became, I mean, it was so visual. Like every day there was something. She was just so weak in the end. God love her.
Broadcaster Anne Gaelgeor, Blanadh Ní Chaoimhe, with Oliver on Tuesday. And Grá an Gaeilge was also very much to the fore on Sunday with Miriam. Hector O'Hookagon was in chatting about his new book, An Irish Word a Day.
I only this year picked up the word for flat white, a bonin. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, I love it.
Go as Jockadee de Shuppa Cafe Osha. We all have our local coffee shop and we all love going and supporting our local coffee shop. And then you go in and say, bonin le the hull, a bonin. It feels like Macon McClancy or someone's coming off a Curragh boat coming off the Aran Islands with the old bonin jumper. But now it's a flat white because that is the way the Irish language is being used now.
He also had a wonderful description for another of his favourite fuckle. Loistín.
Loistín, for example, Loistín. Mm. Loistín is for that spontaneous night and the crack is brilliant and you were supposed to get home or you missed the train and you have no bed to stay and then somebody gives you that lovely little box room and they go, well, ain't Loistín at? Well, Loistín at? Loistín is somebody who goes to the Oireachtas for 2 days and stays for four. Loistín is somebody who goes to the Aran Islands and goes to Inishmore and Inishman for a night and stays for a week. Loistín is the lovely little box room bed. There might be in the winter time a little electric blanket, but there's a cup of tea as well in the morning. Loistín is not accommodation, is such a clinical word, but Oscailge, Loistín is a beautiful bed to rest your head.
That's Hector O'Hookagon there with Miriam. Earlier we had a blast from yesterday's Rising Time with Shea Byrne. Well, of course, as well as being a radio presenter, Shea MCs all manner of events, and he popped into Clare with some hot tips for organising a table quiz.
Very important. Set the questions to be entertaining. If you're going to have an audio round, I'll go back to what I was going to say about the questions. Don't rock up with your little tiny speaker for a room of 60 people and you hear, what's, you know, none of that. Have it right. So that's the thing. Mm-hmm. Whoever's setting the questions, go over the questions that they've set. Make sure they're entertaining and make sure most of them can be answered.
I did a table quiz with my children, my husband, my children. We got killed for putting down like the wrong answer. There was war. We're nearly barred for fighting.
And Claire read out a text from an expert quizzer who, along with his team of equally expert quizzers, landed in a table quiz somewhere in Laois.
We had experts on sport, film, music, etc. We rocked up to a local quiz in rural County Laois. I bet they put manners on you. We flew into the lead with 20 out of 20 in the first two rounds, but fair play to the locals. They put manners on us in round three with a series of questions on the local GAA team that won a junior championship back in the 70s. We got what we deserved. Ha.
Rising Times, Shea Byrne, guesting with Claire on Wednesday. And yesterday's programme was Claire Byrne's swan song here on Radio 1. We wish her all the best and look forward to including much from David McCullough on future programmes. Louise Duffy had a Bank Holiday Studio 8 session on Monday. The guest was the Divine Comedy's Neil Hannon. He closed out the session with The Last Time I Saw the Old Man.
Dementia, so many people seem to experience, you know, it these days. I didn't want to sugarcoat it and I didn't want to sort of make any profound statements. I have no wisdom on the subject. In fact, it's the very sort of unfairness and futility of it which kind of drove me to make the song. Mm. So it is just rather a bald kind of, this is how I saw it. And no, for tributes, go look at the rest of my work, because basically my entire career is a tribute to my father and his musicality.
Really?
And his wisdom. Neither of my parents pushed me in any particular direction, for which I credit them. But Dad was very much the romantic, you know. His was Chopin, Debussy, Rachmaninoff. And he was a very good piano player, as well as a bishop.
Yeah.
But, you know, apart from that, he was also just a really nice guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with a very good outlook on humanity and the world.
Neil Hannon there, Louise Duffy's guest on a Bank Holiday Studio 8 session. Sinead is back next week, so from me, Brian Lally, good morning and thanks for listening. Here's Neil Hannon.
The last time I saw the old man, he was moving very slowly. To know me, his hands seemed so fragile and gray.